that's the time. You must keep on trying.
I'm playing this song for myself today. For yourself? I feel psychologically fragile. I'm a little depressed for no reason, particular reason that I could put my finger on. This is the listening to this song.
Yeah.
When I used to play many, many years ago, play records on the radio.
Yes.
This was, I would have been afraid when I heard this that it was on the wrong speed.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of slowed down.
It's a little bit slow, but although it's usually done as a pretty slow. Actually, Elvis Costello
does it. Yeah, but the tone quality, I mean, it sounds like it's...
That's live.
Ranking.
That's why I love it. Elvis Costello does it even slower. You know, Charlie Chaplin actually wrote that song.
Really?
Yeah, most people don't think of Charlie Chaplin as ever
having
written anything.
What's even more amazing is that you know that.
Yeah. But I'm very depressed today for no particular reason. I think it's like, I'm just sort of wondering what life is all about today. Do you ever have those days?
Yep.
What's your mood like today anyway?
I was in a crappy mood this morning, and frankly, I was at an upset stomach this morning when I was walking.
Yeah. And yet
now, been great.
How about now?
Now it's not bad.
Your mood or your stomach, or both?
Stomach's fine, mood's okay.
Yeah.
Just sort of okay.
I'm just wondering what we're all living here for. You know, what's the point of life, really, exactly?
Well, you certainly have put some zip and pizzazz in today's program so far. Hey, I got to tell you, someone stole my earphones.
Yeah, headphones, yeah.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Off my desk.
Right.
Which is pretty low.
Yeah.
But Dan Whalen let me borrow these new ones.
They look good on you, actually.
Oh, I can get them for the looks.
Maybe it's part of your makeover. You could go to that.
With headphones?
Yeah, he's got these kinds of have a little bit more chrome on them for you. Those
yeah, they're
at home than his usual headphones.
The usual ones are black. They're just basic black.
I don't know. You're losing weight. You got some new fashions. You got
new headphones.
Some kicky looking headphones on. I think your life's moving in a good direction.
I think so.
And
no
I'm just not so sure about my
here.
Life. That makes me even more depressed.
Oh, I think your life.
You know what really depressed me? I was already depressed. This is really true. I was already depressed. I mean, just really sort of, what is the point of life? What am I doing here? What is the point of my existence on the planet?
Yeah.
And I do have some very specific ways in which I want to address this in the very near future.
Uh-huh.
And on top of, I mean, and I'll get to those, although I think it's also, well, never mind. I'll get to all of it. But I'm talking to Curry on the phone just a few minutes ago.
You know, I was just going to say, and things were really bad, and then the phone rang,
yeah.
And it was Curry.
It was Curry. And his life is like...
Good?
Good. I mean, I can't really get into the details, but his life is actually, I mean, when, you know, he's on an upward arc.
Yeah, but that's that's good, though, because think about that for a minute. If he's on an upward arc,
that
means you're not going to get depressing phone calls. Saying, oh, my life.
No, maybe he'll start getting
awful.
Depressing phone calls from me again. I mean, I've done that to him in the
You're
past.
You're not that too,
so.
Depressed. I don't think.
So, I don't know. I'm sure. You know what? One thing that really depressed me, believe it or not, was listening to Air America over the weekend. I was in New York City. I was listening to Air America,
right.
Which is the,
new liberal.
Al Franken Garofalo. Franken! Franken,
no,
55 years, I'd like to talk radio now, Franken. Well, actually,
55 years, they haven't even had talk radio for 55 years.
That's your story. Never a sick day is what I say.
Anyway, you're in New York, you're listening to whatever.
And it's not any good, first of all. I mean, that's the thing that's really depressing. Oh, jeez, I hate it when these computers do this. Another depressing thing just happened just now. But
I've got something... They can beat all of it, but go ahead.
I know. You know what the truth is? I don't have any real problems. I mean, my life's fine. I'm healthy. I got great friends and people around me I really care about.
Yeah.
And
what's the problem?
An entertaining job. I don't know. I just feel sorry for myself for no particular reason. But
you have not only entertaining job, you have entertaining jobs.
Entertaining jobs.
I mean, who could really ask for an awful lot more than what you have?
This is true. But so here I am. I'm listening to Air America. And I suppose from our point of view, we do a left-to-center talk radio show. Air America, that should look like the prize on the shelf, right? That should look like nationally syndicated.
I somehow doubt it, and I think I know why, and I haven't even heard it yet.
It's really not very good, and I listened to some of Al Franken's show, and I listened to some of somebody else's show, and I find myself thinking, A, this is not very good, and B, maybe it's not very good in a way that our show's not very good. Maybe... Everything that is bothering me about these shows that I'm listening to is also true of my own performance.
I don't think so.
And that made me really depressed.
No, I don't think so.
That after all these years of working in talk radio, maybe I'm no better than that. You know, that, and I can't even exactly tell you what's... First of all, I should say one thing about Air America, which is also, they seem to have some structural problems. They keep going off the air in certain markets. And they're not even on the air in that many markets, but some of those markets they keep going off the air in. And I think they're going to lose their Chicago, their place on the dial in Chicago on April 30th. In what one account says is the latest and apparently final development in a financial frankenfracas. Between Air America.
There's a couple of other words you could put in there that would really make that a tongue twister.
And Multicultural News Radio, the firm that owns its Chicago and Los Angeles stations.
Supposedly they got some of that straightened out. But I I think one of the stations.
I think they're off the air in Los Angeles now, and then they got back on.
They got back on, though, somewhere. They were off in two markets.
I mean, this isn't good, you know.
Not really.
From that point of view, you would want to be working for Air America right now anyway, because it just doesn't, it sounds like there might be some actual business problems.
Yeah.
That, you know, they could be solved. Maybe they'll be solved, maybe they won't. But I just didn't like it. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was interesting. I thought it was a lot of cycling through of a lot of pretty predictable stuff. I'm looking at the website Counterpunch right now, and there's a piece by Bruce Anderson that begins... I can read it from here. Am I the only person around who feels in his bones that these are the last days? Just what we need. 24-hour talk radio as stupid as Limbaugh et al. How many more unfunny ways could Franken say that Democrats are good, Republicans bad? I'm probably fortunate not to know who either Janine Garofalo or Chuck D is. And he goes on and on. But he just basically just sort of says, it's just, it's not good. It's not, it's...
Supposedly, I haven't heard this, but there's a young woman by the name of Randy Rhodes on this network that's supposed to be pretty good.
If she's the one who comes on after...
She was in West Palm Beach working for Clear Channel.
We've got a caller who knows something.
I didn't even see that. I was just.
Well, do you want to put this person on there?
Who is this?
Buck. Who is? We'll find out what his name is.
Right.
What is your name?
Buck.
Okay. Well, how are you?
I'm good. I've been trying to call in. I just didn't know the number. When you started talking about Air America,
yeah.
I agree that some of the programs are not that good and they have patent program, you know, problems like that. But Randy Rhodes is really, really good.
Now, when is Randy Rhodes on?
I'm sorry?
What time of day is Randy Rhodes on?
I think he's 3 to 6 or 12 to 6.
Oh, that's our time. We don't want that to be any good. That makes me even more depressed. But the one good thing on the network is up against our show?
No. See, they would put the best.
But it's not available in Connecticut, so you guys are the only.
Well, it's not available in Connecticut yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the way the poor people are going, I don't think they'll ever be here.
No, I don't think it's. It doesn't seem all that viable, but that's a good show, huh?
It is really good, and I mean, I got this Majority Report with Janine Garofalo.
Yeah.
And they talked to Colin Quinn, and that was pretty really informative.
They talked to who?
Like that.
Who did they talk to?
Colin Quinn from.
Oh, Colin Quinn, yeah, that guy from, yeah.
And he was kind of the right wing kind of thing, perspective, and Janine Garofalo was like on screen. So it was not. Like, you know how on TV they start, if there's a right guy and a left guy, they just become berserk. And
yeah, start. I hate that berserk thing.
But this was not like that. It was very friendly, and it was just like they were talking and having a conversation rather than screaming at each other.
What do you think we should do for this show? What would make this show better, in your opinion?
Oh,
You. What do you think we should do on this show?
Yeah, I don't have a women, like, come in and talk, maybe, like... have a co-emperor.
Well, we've already got two people in here. How many people can we put in here?
Not ready. I can do it.
Well, you want to come in? What are you doing this afternoon?
I'm sorry?
What are you doing this afternoon?
This afternoon, I have to run some errands.
All right. Well, then someday when you're not doing errands, come on in and see if we could, if you could sort of just...
I know. I'd definitely love to come in.
Yeah, I'm just so depressed
because
today.
I'm a Pakistani married to an Italian-American. And I have a very different perspective.
So you're sort of a coalition of the willing, you know, right in your house, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Do you ever refer to your family as the coalition of the willing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm strongly opposed to the war in Iraq.
Right.
And any war, I'm a pacifist, so is my husband.
Oh, good. Well, no wonder you like us in Air America, because so are we. Yeah, so are we. Anyway, thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
You can't just invite just anybody in.
I know, off the street. I know.
She may do an excellent job, and probably, and as
I know
she
that.
Said, she had has a different perspective.
She could be a psycho killer, too, for all we
know. Well, yeah,
you
know. There's that, too.
Yeah. All right, our number is, since she didn't know the number, we should say our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-9...
She didn't know the number. How did she get through?
Well, because she really wanted to, and it's kind of like...
Well, so what do you do? If you really want to, you conjure the number
you
up?
You have to clap very hard. It's like Peter Pan. It's how you keep things alive. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
and just clap your hands really hard, and soon you'll be on the phone to us.
Right.
522-WTIC, if you want to use a more conventional method, 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Or you can click your heels together and say, there's no place like WTIC. There's no place like WTIC.
And that would be true.
For a lot of reasons. But don't get the feeling that the next phone call is going to be an unkind one.
Why? Why?
Yeah.
Because it is.
Yeah. Do we want to take this now or go to break? What do you want to do? What's your instinct?
All right. Mr. Sherwood says we should take it now,
right.
Which scares me even more.
Yeah.
Mike in West Hartford. Mike? Mike?
Hey, Colin.
What?
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, Mike. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you to improve your show a little
yeah.
bit?
Mm-hmm.
And talk about the governor every day.
Well, you know, we really don't like talking about the governor every day.
And then change things a little bit. So I criticize Rush Limbaugh, too.
Okay.
Every now and then.
Well, what you're doing is you're suggesting that's what we do, right?
Oh, is that what you're doing now, Warren?
You're being sarcastic and hurtful,
no.
aren't you? At a time when I'm psychologically fragile, you bastard. You bastard, Mike.
Well, that went well. Mike, thanks for calling. We don't talk about the governor that much.
No, actually, lately we haven't been talking about him that much at all, because to tell you the truth, I think the case has kind of stalled out a little bit. But, you know, we are doing a news... Can I just say one thing about that? We are doing a news talk radio show in Connecticut where they're impeaching the governor. And
yeah, so it would only figure...
It's kind of hard not to talk about
it. On occasion, we'd mention it.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, in some ways, I don't like doing a monochromatic show. And to tell you the truth, I'd much rather talk about, for example, myself.
Well, I'm sure we'll get to that.
but sometimes we have to talk about the governor. It's just unavoidable.
Join WTIC.
Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving. Knowing what's wrong, knowing what's key, cause every hand's a winner, and every hand's a loser, and the best that you can hope for is to die in sleep. And when he's finished...
All right, that's enough.
He turned back toward the...
Yeah, I got a question. If you're playing in one of the rolling poker games,
yeah.
and your hand really stinks, can someone come in and improve it for you while you're playing?
Only for the governor.
Only for the governor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, kind of funny. Looks like Roland wins again. What a surprise. Andy up, boys.
Actually, I don't happen to believe that rumor. As prepared as I am to believe almost anything about the Roland administration, I don't believe that.
What?
The thing was, I mean, I'd heard this rumor for quite some time. There were poker games where people were expected to lose a certain amount of money to him. You know, that it was kind of understood that, you know, that
Because he doesn't, as governor, he didn't make enough money?
Yeah, that, you know, this is like another way, I mean, it's just too outlandish. One thing that is now clear is that there's simpler ways to get the money to him. You know, the idea that you would go to all that trouble and kind of wreck poker night. I mean, I don't go to poker night anywhere, but I mean, I would assume it's not that much fun if you actually are required to lose a certain amount of money to one of the participants. I just never believed that rumor. Now, that said, clearly the federal grand jury is looking into some aspect of poker night.
It's pretty funny, though, isn't it?
Whether we're paying for the cold cuts or, you know, whatever. Really, if the worst thing that was happening is that we were paying for the food for poker night, I'd feel okay. But it's just... You know, did this man ever actually do anything having to do with being governor? I mean, it just seems like he's been out on the lake in his bass boat.
He's been a little busy.
Smoking cigars, drinking champagne, sitting in the hot tub, playing golf, going on numerous vacations that, you know, from here to hell and back.
Driving the Mustang.
Driving the Mustang, riding the dirt bikes. I mean, it just doesn't
seem like there's been any time
to actually... And no wonder Mark Ryan works 18
hours. Camouflage. Yeah. Forgot that.
No wonder Mark Ryan works 18-hour days. He's doing two jobs. I don't think this guy does anything. I mean, if nothing else, you know, even if he weren't guilty of everything else, I would say Governor Rowland has defrauded us just in terms of drawing any salary at all, whether it was $78,000 or $150,000. I don't think he does anything. So there. Actually, I have a voice problem today because James, who's the woebegone producer of the Roy and Debbie show, came in and he said he'd gotten Lewis Black to be on the Roy and Debbie show. And I launched into and then I didn't know that I did a Lewis Black impersonation. I started doing a Lewis Black impersonation of Lewis Black on the Roy and Debbie show. And I've actually wrecked my voice in the process. I don't want to buy Tinman replacement windows. I want the windows that are in my house. That kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So
your voice sounds fine to me.
Well, it's strained. I strained it doing that. But I may be doing it a little bit more as time goes on anyway. During the rest of the show, I may burst occasionally into an impersonation of
Lewis. I hope you will.
Lewis Black. That was a dumb question, Diane. Positively Connecticut? I'm positively sure. I want to get out of Connecticut. My Lewis Black on the morning show.
Very good. Thank you. Yeah.
So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today, including we can talk about the goofy poker stuff. I don't know if
there's beat a straight, by the way.
You know, that's one of the problems with me in poker. I don't know how to play poker, and when I do play, people have to write down for like what all the things are and what they're worth and stuff. I just have no recollection. We do have.
What if somebody actually wrote down the wrong information for you? For example, to bleed you dry.
Yeah, I think Tommy Judson did that to me one time, actually. I've been victimized in so many ways. I really can't keep track anymore. In terms of the poker thing, also, I guess I should attribute this. When people say things to me that are funny, I'm always kind of torn between A, wanting to say them on the air and pretend I thought them up.
Feeling them, yeah.
B, maybe I should attribute them to the person who said them to me. C, maybe that person doesn't want it attributed to him or her. You know, and I don't know.
Or D, that person might not want to admit that they actually know you.
Right. But in this case, I'm going to attribute it. And it was Bill Curry called me from the road today. He was on his way to New York, and he just sort of proposed the following Zen exercise, which is, in your mind, picture the famous painting, I believe that it's by Goya, but I'm not sure, of dogs playing poker. And then, in your mind, figure out which dog is which Roland contributor, you know? So anyway, that's a little mental exercise. Later in the show, we are going to talk to Kevin Rennie, the spirited and unpredictable columnist for Northeast Magazine and former Republican legislator, and during a period of derangement, a Steve Forbes supporter. But we won't be talking to him about that. One of the things that I want to talk to Kevin about specifically is, if you're listening, Kevin, is the race between Ann Moore and Joe McKenzie for the seat on the Democratic Central Committee, Republican Central Committee. My question is, should anybody care about that who doesn't follow politics? Does it have any real actual meaning? And we'll talk about that, as well as whatever else Kevin wants to talk about. He kind of knows where the bodies are buried, if you know what I mean. Then later in the show today, we're going to talk to a prison, sort of an alternative incarceration. I don't know about you, but I'm really interested in this whole thing. You know, we got so many damn prisons in this state, and during the 90s, we just did nothing but build prisons. We built, there's like 20 prisons in the state of Connecticut right now. I mean, when I was growing up, there were like two or something.
You go up to the Summers area.
Yeah, it's like dotted with prisons. It's like all we did during the 90s. No wonder we have this huge bonding problem. The only thing anybody could think of to do is build prisons. Anyway, and it costs $26,000 a year in Connecticut to keep somebody in prison. Almost anything else you could think of to do with them, except the one other thing that John Rowland has been able to think of to do with criminals, which is to give them jobs in the state government. But other than that, any other thing that you might actually think of to do with them would be cheaper.
But
that was good.
You know, but so anyway, Maureen Price, who's from one of the alternative incarceration organizations, will be joining us to talk about that. And
the other states who would take them, you know.
Yeah.
For Virginia, of course.
Right.
Are we still doing that?
You know what?
Or did we break that off?
I think we're all through. Maureen would probably know. We can ask her.
Of the other states, so they'd be willing to.
I'm not sure.
Take a few prisoners.
It's funny, too, because I was just emailing back and forth today with somebody else from the state of Connecticut who was still outraged about Rollins Ridge. So anyway, that's the guest situation. We have time to take your phone calls right now. The numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star-WTIC. And, of course, we also have the thrilling proposition of our admissions program being completely shut down. It is in ruins. And I'm interested in certain aspects of this report, including the fact that, first of all, if you saw the thing about the independent audit that they did of this admissions program, it first of all identified 63 categories of problems, 63 different kinds of problems.
Pretty good.
That's a lot of problems.
But they're varied problems.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if it was like, you know, inspectors with bad skin is a problem or something. I mean, it seems like a lot of problems. It seems like they might have been stretching. I mean, we have more problems with our admissions program than, for example, Martin Luther had theses. And you could think of lots of other things that didn't have, that there aren't 63 of. So 53 problems is a lot. And then the audit, I'd like to see the, I don't know if the full sort of, you know, the raw copy of the audit is available to the public. I would imagine it would be. We paid for it. And for all I know, Dana Whalen, if I walk out to the newsroom now, Dana Whalen will not have it because it just works that way. But I was intrigued by the fact that they apparently, in each category of problem, and in other words, in each sort of axis of problems, all 63 problems, they rated each problem on a possible five-point scale. From annoying to catastrophic. I'm not making this up. This sounds like something I would make up, but I'm not. I'm not making this up.
That's the sad thing about it.
Yeah.
I know you're not making it up.
And it's annoying on the good end, as it were, and then catastrophic on the bad end. And then what I want to know is what are the other 3 points? I mean, I'm intrigued to know what the steps are that go from annoying to catastrophic. What are those three intermediary steps?
Cataclysmic must be in there somewhere.
I don't see cataclysmic and catastrophic. To me, that's the same thing.
Yeah, that's pretty much, yeah. What would be a step down from catastrophic?
I don't know, or a step up from annoying. Way annoying?
Delhaney?
Yeah. No, he's a step down from annoying.
he has another visit.
He's beneath annoying. But anyway, it just, I really want and don't want to read the audit report, but I want to know how they're going to be 63 different problems. I mean, you drive the freaking car in, they stick a hose on it, and they look at the meter. How can there be 63 things
wrong?
Well,
how many meters do they have?
I don't know. There's probably more than that. I'm sure I'm oversimplifying it. It's got to be stuff like, you know, the emissions inspectors were also selling wiper blades and stuff. You know, it's a black market wiper
blade. Used wiper blade.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's all of that to talk about as well. And our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star-WTIC. Nancy Johnson finally has an opponent, and it's not Maloney, it's Marconi. Sounds like Maloney. An opponent that rhymes with Maloney. She could only run against people
Marconi?
Now.
Marconi?
Marconi is his name.
Is this the same Marconi that Arnold Dean knew many years ago?
The guy who got into radio with
Arnold?
No, I don't think so. It's a good radio name.
Oh,
but
get much better than that.
I believe he's an assistant attorney general. Of course, there's so many assistants. I may be an assistant attorney general. That tells you nothing, really.
You were, but they took that away.
I don't know anything about him. I mean, I wish him well. I actually think, you know, as I look at the congressional races around the state, okay, Larson could be congressman for life. I mean, and DeLauro could be a congresswoman for life. You're never going to get those people out. And not that we would want to either. They're both fine congresspeople. But Simmons, I think, is going to be very tough to beat, and I don't think either one of those guys. There's Jim Sullivan, who's from Norwich, and he's like a selectman or something.
Huh.
And there's Sean McNally, who's...
Here we go.
Well, no, I know. I mean, I'm not saying that they're clowns or anything like that, but I just don't think they move the needle.
I'm not saying that they're clowns or anything, but
Yeah, well, I mean, whoever heard of him?
I know.
And there's some real believers in Sean McNally, and I've heard some good things about Jim Sullivan. But Simmons is, in fact, he's a very good, aggressive campaigner who does really good constituent service and stuff like that. He's going to be very tough to get out. And Shays, even though, I mean, I think with Diane Farrell, he's got the toughest opponent he's faced in a long time and probably the toughest row to hoe he's had in a while. I think he would be tough to get. But Nancy Johnson is not, you know. She's just this wild, shrieking monkey who I think, you know, can be brought down from her tree.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All I have to say. After a All right, we're back. We'll take a few phone calls here.
Yeah. Think there's any chance of Boomer making back and hook up with Nancy Johnson?
We need Boomer back. He's done it before. He can do it again.
When I heard monkey, it immediately triggered that.
That's because for people that don't know, I actually offered. I tried to bribe Boomer to get Nancy Johnson to jump on Jim Maloney's back like a wild monkey.
And scream, I think, was involved.
She had to screech, too.
But there was money involved.
That was like $500.
Yeah. Ron in a car. Ron?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say I agree with you guys. I don't think we should.
Little oyster.
All right, Kevin, unless you want to sing along. Unless you want to finish up the song. It's time to talk to Kevin Rennie, columnist for the Hartford Guard Northeast Magazine, and lawyer, and I don't know what else. And during a demented period of his life, a Steve Forbes supporter. Hello.
Hello.
I thought you'd enjoy being played on there with Julie Wilson, your old buddy.
Very nice. She is 79 years old, still packing them in New York and leaving for an engagement in London next month.
Yeah.
You can...
This is, by the way, I mean, that was Julie Wilson and Kevin and Julie really are friends, and that's why we did that. Anyway, also, the Oyster song suddenly seems to kind of fit John Rowland, but then so many songs do.
Yes. Like My Old Flame and all those things.
Yeah, well, or we found a nice Joe Williams tune called I've Only Myself to Blame.
Joe
talking...
Joe Williams had a lot of songs like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, okay, you win.
Joe Williams could maybe do a set at the governor's mansion, and I'm sure Joe McKenzie would be happy to set that up. Now, I wanted to ask you, because you've been a traveler within the world of Republican politics, and I don't think I entirely know whether it matters or why it matters who's on the Republican National Committee and whether that person is Joe McKenzie or Ann Moore or someone else. Now, for people who don't know, Joe McKenzie, who's been sort of this grand dame of the Republican Party for many, many years.
Certainly during the Rowland administration.
Yeah. Well, you tell the story, actually. You're already in so much trouble with Joe McKenzie, you can't possibly make anything worse.
She has been certainly a leading figure politically and socially in the Republican Party for a long time, and came to great prominence during these past 10 years of the Rowland administration, and has been on the Republican National Committee, which is the committee oversees the Republican National Committee, and each state gets two members, a man and a woman. And it's probably not very important who's on that committee for purposes of the National Republican Party, but suddenly, briefly, in Connecticut, it's important for reasons unrelated to the Republican National Committee who gets that seat. And the reason is that Joe McKenzie, as a political figure, has been seriously hobbled by all these scandalous goings-on, and her term is up, and she's facing re-election early next month, and she's being challenged by another not quite as prominent Republican, Ann Moore, I think of Milford now, so it's a big fight, and the 72 members of the Republican State Central Committee, which is two members from each state Senate district, will decide who gets that seat. And so if Joe McKenzie were to lose it, it would be a political inside the party body blow to John Rowland.
In a way, I mean, is it fair to say that if Ann Moore were to win, or somebody else other than Joe McKenzie were to win that seat, I mean, since in fact this is kind of about the State Central Committee, it would be kind of a sign that the Republican leadership here in the state of Connecticut really is beginning to distance itself from everybody having to do with
it. Well, it would be, but the problem is that I'm not sure that the Republican State Central Committee really represents very much.
No.
It's an isolated group. There's usually not very much interest in being on it. They think of themselves as important, but they there's not a lot of political savvy there. But they're the ones who get to decide. And it's very insular. Ann Moore has a vivid personality in a much different way than Joe McKenzie's sort of air-kissing kind of personality. And, you know, Ann
Moore... Did you say air-kissing? I just wanted to make that...
Yeah,
okay.
You know that kind of... You know.
I just wanted to make sure under what circumstances what part of the body was being kissed. You know, actually, one thing that was pointed out, I don't know how true or fair this is, but doubtless you are aware that there's a website called Your News 2, which I think is run by Dick Foley, or I don't know, it's got some better connection to somebody in the Republican Party.
I think you and I are the only two people who sign what we write, Colin.
Yeah, there are a lot of unsigned articles on this particular website, and the one that I'm looking at right now suggests that for all of her prominence in the Republican Party in Connecticut, right. Joe McKenzie is not really...
She hasn't given two sous.
except
to the Wyoming Republicans.
She gave $250 to the Wyoming GOP to help them turn out their vote, which isn't necessarily a measure of leadership, but my sense of these central committee posts and national committee posts is that they really do, perhaps I'm being unfair, particularly in the Republican Party, one of the measures of who you are and how much you care is that you give money to the party, right?
Well, that is true, and I can't let you get away with saying particularly in the Republican Party.
I just did that to be provocative.
Because it is certainly in the Clinton years, mm-hmm. it was especially true in the Democratic Party.
Yes, that's true.
And the Democrats have traditionally relied much more on big givers than the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But it matters in both parties. It matters. It matters in every important campaign. Money matters more now than it ever has in politics.
And
raising money is important. And the Republican National Committee man, Charlie Glaser from Greenwich, he raises tremendous amounts of money in Connecticut terms. Connecticut is a decent sort of ranked. Pretty high on where money comes from, but it's not in the league of New York or California. But Charlie Glaser is the top Bush campaign fundraiser in Connecticut. Joe McKenzie has just not been a big money raiser and not a big money donor. She's had an aura, and in the last 10 years she's had the armor of John Rowland, and that's gone.
Yeah, I mean, this is... She's sort of been kind of one of the family, or thought to be kind of one of the family of the Rowlands. This at this point, that's like saying, you know, you are a bridesmaid at Bonnie and Clyde's wedding or something. But I want to shift gears over and just talk about what's going on with the legislative inquiry committee and stuff like that too. Which is, at one point I sort of thought, well, there's just not enough time and it's too complicated and they're not going to get this done. I don't know what you think, but I'm sensing right now that this committee is so radicalized and so ticked off at the Rowlands that they are going to return some kind of significant vote on this, and probably, you know, before the end of June.
Oh, I thought from the beginning that the membership of the committee was such that there would be a vote for... It wouldn't take a lot to get a vote of impeachment out of them. There is a lot there, so mm-hmm. I've always thought that there would be significant facts for them to proposed to the full House, but those five Republicans in particular were not exactly the most Rowland friendly. In fact, a couple of them have been quietly very hostile to him over the last few years.
Well, any reader of your column would know at least who one of those people was probably. I think more than that, though, I think that the Rowland strategy, I mean, Arthur O'Neill in particular at this point seems really radicalized because he feels like they're getting pushed around. He doesn't like it.
Well, that's true, and Arthur O'Neill has a tremendous amount of respect for institutions, order, and he's been in the House for 16 years, and I think he was a good choice. But in addition to that, they are constrained to share details with the public, but I believe they are seeing things that are astonishing them.
Mm-hmm.
and that then that no amount of wishful partisanship is going to allow them to make any excuse for. And I did hear the governor on Ray and Diane this morning quizzing the co-hosts of that program as to whether or not they had their credit card bills from 9 years ago. Well, they probably don't, but they probably haven't written to ask for them, which you can get in a very short time. And those, certainly the American Express card bills that the governor had to explain to the State Elections Commission last year, should be readily available since he's already been through this once. His excuses are getting weaker and weaker. They started out pretty lame, but they are getting even worse.
Well, we have to jump out to traffic right now, but Kevin Rennie, thanks very much. Now, are you in this Sunday, or is this a hiatus week for you?
I am not in this Sunday.
All right.
But okay. I'll be sitting in front of my laptop writing for next Sunday.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. Thanks,
Thank
Kevin.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Mike Allen flying here when he's funded.
But last evening down in Lover's Lane, she strayed, madam.
I just want to say, this isn't as much Miss Julie Wilson as I want to hear, like, for the next 6 months.
She's unable to love.
She's a very nice lady. There's only so much of that I can take.
What would happen if we were to continue to play, like, a lot of it? What would happen?
I just think
would
that
you completely flip?
Listen, I love cabaret singing and stuff like that, but, I mean, that's, like, the extreme, and it's like I listen to that, and then I feel like I need to listen to Pantera or something like that.
Would that be the annoying end or the catastrophic?
I don't know. Using the Agbar scale, I'm not 100% sure, actually, how that works. But
I think there are so many other things we could apply to the Agbar scale. The Agbar scale
but
to measure.
We need to know what the other three things are. And maybe this caller knows. Maybe Jerry from Middletown knows.
Find out. Jerry, hi.
And I don't know if I'm ever coming home.
Sandra Wilson doing the Monkees tune, Last Train to Clarksville. And there's a number of things that I might want to say about that, but I just do want to mention that, you know, the future is here. All the stuff that we always thought was sort of in the future, it's kind of all coming now, including in Shanghai, a train that in fact is, that has no tracks, that is in fact a magnetic levitation train. It's the world's first in commercial service, and it goes from downtown Shanghai to the airport in 8 minutes. Its peak speed is 268 miles per hour, and it does not ride on tracks.
But it must have something, though, right? It doesn't just go where it wants to go.
No, there is a path that it goes on, but yeah. In other words, it's not going on rails.
Right.
Maybe that's what I should say. It's not on rails.
So we don't have that friction problem going.
Right. You know friction. Yeah. It's a magnetic levitation type train. It's here. It's happening. It's now. While we've been doing this last little segment of the show, there have been some people around here with a video camera and stuff like that. And they're from the Connecticut AIDS Residents Coalition. Bruce and I are participating in a fundraiser, which I believe is May 6th. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy Takeoff involves ourselves, Jim Shea, and Mayor Eddie Perez. We're all going to get wardrobe and grooming and other tips, even eyewear tips in some cases. The problem, though, is that the Queer Eye eyewear consultant is Carl, who is my eyewear guy. So he'll just walk up to me and look at my glasses and say they look really great because he sold them to me. He picked them out in the first place.
Right.
I didn't even pick out these glasses. Carl picked out my glasses. So anyway, that's all at the Pond House on May 6th. If you want to go, you should get on the website. It's www.ctaidshousing.org, ctaidshousing.org, which is the website of the Connecticut AIDS Residents Coalition. You can also call them. I give you the number, but I forgot it. But they're in the phone book, Connecticut AIDS Residents Coalition. And Mr. Ambrosio will be the MC that night. Mm-hmm. The elf, Kara Sundlin, will be one of the judges. I don't know who else will be a judge. There'll be some other people who are judges. And lots of
when you say judge,
yeah,
what does that
entail? I'm not sure what the judges do. I think it's best that we ask very few questions about this and just do
just kind of show up.
Just do what we're told, yeah. But we've already got our outfits given. They've sort of been picked out for us by, in our case, Koozies, and then Tuesdays is doing the mayor, And Daswani is doing Shea.
Right.
Jim Shea. So.
So it took two koozies to do us.
Yeah, it took two koozies to do us. Well, there's two of us. Anyway, so that's what's happening, and we do encourage you to go to this thing. It could be a fun.
No, wait a minute. They were in the other room talking to Sherwood.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Is any of that going to be used?
Yeah, he's going to be. I'm sure he dumped all over us.
Well, of course he did.
Yeah. And then, you know, last night I saw Kill Bill Volume 2.
He'll pay for it.
Yeah, he will make them pay. Last night I saw Kill Bill Volume 2. Now, the only reason I go to these Kill Bill movies, I want to say, is because I have a 14-year-old son who thinks that they're good.
And I think he uses kid as kind of a, you know.
Well, there's a lot of movies that I'm
excuse.
I wind up being pleased to go to. I mean, I could name a number of movies in the last year that I didn't want to go to, but I wound up enjoying. I went there with my son. I would say that the Matt Damon, Greg Kinnear, Siamese twin movie, Stuck on You, I think it was called.
Yep.
I love that movie. It was a terrific movie. I wouldn't have gone to it for $1 million if I didn't have a 14-year-old kid.
Right.
Same thing
And I can see why.
Yeah. Same thing with Latin. Did you see it?
No.
No. It actually is a surprisingly good and touching and endearing movie. I would say the same thing about The Last Samurai. I went to that because Joey wanted to go.
Surprised I missed that, but I did.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the best movies I saw last year. I just utterly enjoyed it. I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan. I love the movie.
Have you tried the drive by the cinema, give the kid a few bucks, dump them off, and say bye-bye, see you in a couple of hours routine? That works pretty good.
Except that, you know, I mean, I'm so ultimately pleased to see a lot of these movies, and then, you know, you wind up talking about them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And of course, my whole rule about movies with kids, particularly if it's like an R-rated movie or something like that, is that, with my son anyway, I'll take him to see almost any movie. I do have limits, and there are places that I draw the line, but I'll take him to a lot of movies that maybe a lot of parents wouldn't take a 14-year-old, with the understanding that we'll have a conversation afterwards that sort of, you know, so we make sure that we understand, you know, what the real values, what our values are as opposed to the values of the movie, or maybe what the real values of the movie were. And this works, I think, although the one time that I was defeated this year was Bad Santa, which I actually thought was the funniest movie I'd seen in years, but I got in the car and I thought, you know, there are certain things that I don't know how to have a conversation with my 14-year-old son about, and they're all in this movie. So we didn't do too well that time. But anyway, I don't really have time to say anything about the Kill Bill movie other than to say, I can never decide whether these movies are any good or not. They're either really, really, really good trashy movies or really, really bad trashy movies. I guess there's no possibility that they just are good movies in my mind. And I do also want to say that Daryl Hannah, I don't understand why Daryl Hannah didn't have a career, but she's in this movie, and she's a million times better than Uma Thurman. I mean, I think she's the best thing in the movie. So figure that out. It's like Jonathan Schwartz or something. We're sort of so into classic jazz these days. Bobby Sherwood has been in the... Actually, I've got A Kind of Blue out in my car. Might as well just, you know, round the whole thing out and play that too.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got time to take some phone calls here. Coming up, we have Maureen Price to talk about alternatives to incarceration, and which is, I don't know, increasingly a thing that's bothering me is just the number of people we lock up and the number of prisons we build. Notwithstanding, you know, I brought this up at the beginning of the show, and just immediately these, you know, right-wing ditto-head pinheads you've given this no thought whatsoever. None. You can't lock up enough people to make these guys
pinheads. Happy.
They really were. Both of those callers were pinheads. I mean, they both were. I mean, I got no problem with talking to people who believe something different from me, but, I mean, those guys were both idiots. And anyway, we're going to talk about that. And not about the fact that those guys were idiots. We're going to talk about actual alternatives to incarceration. And, you know, even if you're a law and order person, you got to think about the amount of money that is being spent. $26,000 per inmate. I just don't even understand how conservative.
That's why we should kill them. That's that right there. There's another argument.
It's even more expensive. Death row cases are even more expensive.
But that's an argument you always get.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fiscal conservative, I don't know how you can be comfortable spending $26,000 a year to keep, for example, a drug user, a nonviolent drug possession offender in prison. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. But then again, a lot of things don't make any sense to me. You know, I just want to quickly mention, I don't think you're going to find us carrying a lot of water for John Kerry over the course of this campaign. He's obviously a much better choice than President Bush in terms of being a president. But, you know, Corbin Bernstein is a better choice for president than President Bush, so the standard isn't really all that high. John Kerry will do just fine, given what we're used to. But I do think that in terms of the Navy records and the medical records and stuff like that, from what I can see, what he's put up there on the website, I think that pretty much answers all the questions. You know, he was a highly rated soldier. Nobody had any problems with him. His medical records are in order. I think everybody can just shut up about this whole thing. And there's nothing more to say about it. Patty Griffin singing Bruce Springsteen's great song, Stolen Car, which we play because it talks a little bit about some of the things we're going to be talking about right now, which is sort of what happens to people when they do get in trouble. Joining us right now is Maureen Price. She's the executive director of Community Partners. Well, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has denied Maurice Claret's attempt as a running back to enter the NFL draft. In her strongly worded decision, Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, Claret simply doesn't break many tackles or create his own hole very often. He lacks vision when the hole isn't well-defined, hesitates too much in the backfield, runs upright, and likes to bounce outside plays too much. In general, she sees him perhaps as a return man somewhere down the line. It's time for Sports at 5, a French sports discussion segment of Monsieur Arnoldine, Monsieur Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
See, there's the problem right there. If Ruth Bader Ginsburg said he...
Couple of interesting little items today's from today's Journal Inquirer. We're probably only going to talk about one of them, but a Thailand woman has dropped her bid to try to force the state to return $8,500 to her that it says she used to try to bribe a prosecutor. Apparently, she offered the prosecutor $8,500. Once she realized that it was going to, and I guess it was done through a middleman who turned out to be, I think, an undercover cop or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
She realized that, you know, it might be better just to get the money back, since it really wasn't going to be effective as a bribe. It seemed to her that maybe it would be a good idea. She could have the $8,500.
Yeah.
She could use it for other things.
Right.
She's dropping this. Her, according to her lawyer, he said his client decided to drop it, quote, after consideration, quote.
Probably not much consideration.
Yeah. And then he did not elaborate it about it. And then... Also, very quickly, according to Don Mynchek in the Journal Inquirer, Peter Ellis, before he became the governor's co-chief of staff, and he's one of the people really connected to this, but he was working in a different job at that time, an economic development thing, he actually turned an entire checking account kept by the state economic development agency that he was in charge of over to the Tomaso family and basically said,
Well, that's a much better way to do it.
Yeah, rather than have this complicated idea of the state actually administering Tomaso construction projects or anything like that. And I think this had to do with the Big E. I'll have to go back and reread the article. I believe it has to do with the Big E. Draw your own conclusions. But he just said, look, you guys run the whole thing, and we'll just get out of the way. Yeah. I just wanted to quickly return to this Peter Ellis story. Peter Ellis, of course, one of the key figures in the current Roland administration investigations / scandal / debacle / fiasco / mockery / travesty
/ joke.
Sham, yes.
Yep.
This is Don Mychek from the Journal Inquirer reporting this, that basically before he became, just months before he became co-chief of staff, he was running the Department of Economic and Community Development. And one of the things that they're in charge of, as it turns out, is the beloved Connecticut Pavilion at the Big E. And not only did he make that, turn the contract to run, to maintain and collect fees and stuff like that for the Big E Pavilion, over to Tungsys, which is one of the Tomaso companies, he made them the manager of this pavilion. But what he tried to do, and I guess he was eventually rebuffed by Nancy Wyman, Guardian of Freedom, and maybe other people as well, what he wanted to do was to turn over to the Tomasos a checkbook that the agency, the Economic Development Agency, had, and just use this checking account and checkbook to collect receipts and pay all the state's expenses connected to the Big E. But I mean, I would imagine that there are receipts, because if you're one of the companies there, you have to rent that space.
Yeah,
right? You have to pay the,
right.
So, and then this is one of those sort of little sort of things that's on the cusp. It's sort of Peter Ellis, farsighted innovative bureaucrat, or total freaking reptile. You make the call. It could be one, it could be the other. It's hard to say. But what he wanted to allow was for the Tomasos, in their form of Tunxus, to use the checking account. I already said that part. What he wanted to do was, he proposed that all of the proceeds would just be retained by the Tomasos.
I think that's only fair.
You know, you collect everything and then pay the expenses, and whatever's left, that's yours.
That's called profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's one thing to say to the Tomasos, you know, bid on the contract to tell us how much it would cost to have you guys run the...
Bid and
that's
contract?
You know,
in the same sentence?
I know we don't do that here in the state, and I know that what we do is sort of, you know, we do no-bid contracts and design builds and all this kind of stuff. But I really do think this represents a new iteration of that. I think we're into a whole new area where you basically say, you run it, we're not even going to ask any questions. Whatever. However it works out, good for you, we say. So, it's the wholesale conversion. Now, this is not a lot of money. I think it was a $60,000 contract.
Why isn't the state running it?
Well, because, in fact, I mean, it's part of the overall tide of privatization, I guess you could say, except that nominally,
well, I don't know.
I mean, this represents, there's been an incredible tide of privatization by the state.
But why would you go to privatization?
Well,
because it can be handled better and it can make more money or something like that?
Theoretically, things run better.
And then let them keep all the money that they make?
Well, that's the thing. That's why this represents we're into a whole new area of privatization. Because this isn't so much privatization as the abandonment of all scrutiny whatsoever and just the, you know,
I don't know.
You know what we need? We need The Rock. We need The Rock as Buford Pusser. We need a walking tall kind of person to come in here and just chase the money changers out of the temple. And I guess that's happening anyway. What am I complaining about? It's all coming to life.
That's just not happening fast enough.
It's just, but I mean, really, just every single one of these things, these people, they couldn't have, even the sheep, the innocent sheep at the Big E are now tainted by this.
Tainted wool.
The innocent sheep, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them get called by the grand jury, you know? I mean, they'll have to retain counsel.
What are they going to say?
Yeah.
Bad.
Up to no good.
Oh,
hot tub. So it just, you know, even the Big E, and I think
something
it's
innocent as a Big E.
Innocent and pure and pristine as the Big E.
Right.
I'm sitting here, I'm close to tears. But I think it's appropriate that the Big E is involved in this because basically what Governor Rowland and Peter Eliff and the rest of those people have managed to turn state government into is one of those midways, you know, where you're just constantly throwing softballs at milk bottles and they don't ever quite fall down for some reason.
Yep.
You knock two of them down, but there's one standing up and you
teeters,
can't.
But it won't go over.
Out. Exactly. It teeters, but it won't go over. And the basketball hoop's just a little bit too small for the basketball to go in.
A little too much play in the rim.
And basically, we've been playing those games. We've been plunking our dollars down on the counter, and the carny's been taking them and sticking them in his belt for, you know, since 1995. And we just didn't know. We didn't know that it was a midway, you know. And then there was a small group of people who always got the stuffed animal on the top shelf.
The big
hairy stuffed animals. And those went to the Tomasos and the Matthews and the lobbyists and the Malsinskis and all, you know, they got those big stuffed animals and they went home with the pretty girls.
Yep.
And the rest of us were sitting there pounding away on the sledgehammers, you know, and never making the bell ring, and we couldn't figure out why. Jeez,
that's a beautiful, beautiful analogy.
It's all the Big E. The entire state is the Big E. We just didn't understand that. It's just a ride that flips you around and makes you throw up your corn dog and you don't even know what happened. Well, that guy hung up. The guy wanted to talk about privatization.
Yeah.
I just want to see one sort of semi-serious thing about privatization, which is that It really is. I mean, it's what we've done in our state government. It's happened also to a tremendous degree at the federal level. And privatization is neither all good nor all bad. There's a lot of ways in which privatization can work. I mean, something like garbage hauling or something like that. You really can create a pretty competitive situation, provided, of course, you know, guys don't show up and break your legs and stuff like that. But, I mean, you can create a pretty competitive situation for a measurable service. The problem is that government deals in a lot of not-so-easy-to-measure services, particularly in the social service area. Also, privatization creates, in some respects, a really less responsive situation where, you know, you can't, I mean, you know, the more things get contracted out, you can't even just call and scream at your legislator or your other elected official about this because he's no longer in charge of this. And not only that, but it creates another layer of people who have to bid out all this work. It actually can grow the bureaucracy. I mean, occasionally we reap benefits from privatization, but I think it's been overdone. It's been overdone in government, and it's not always a great idea. I know this is a boring thing to say, but I mean, all you need to do is look at the freaking emissions program, which is where we started our show today, you know, where now not only did privatization garishly not work, the program is shut down, our federal highway funding is theoretically jeopardized, and we have to hire other private contractors to figure out what went wrong.
We had to
pay somebody else for this independent audit where they found out that the other private contractor, Agbar, had 63 different areas of problems. I mean, even
ranging from annoying to catastrophic.
That's right, and rate them on a 5-point scale. We had to pay somebody. Think about this for a second, all right? We had to pay somebody to come up with 63 areas that our other private contractor has problems, and then rate each one of those 63 areas on a 5-point scale, starting with annoying and ending at catastrophic.
And we still don't know what the other three are.
What the intermediary steps between annoying and... But we had to pay somebody to do that. So all I'm saying is the more private you make things, the more you're... I mean, not all companies are run well, you know. A lot of companies are run poorly. Yeah, you may work for one of those companies for all I know, so maybe you know that.
Meanwhile, eliminating state employees and their jobs to make a leaner and, a better, more efficient state government, and yet replacing it with this foolishness.
There is sometimes something to be said for having state employees who are able to deliver services and who know what they're doing. You know, who know what they're doing, and they know how to do it, and they've been doing it. And you know, instead you create this kind of hodgepodge bureaucracy where you're dealing with companies which in many cases turn out to be incompetent. You know, look at Agbar. Or corrupt. It's not...
Well, that may be getting back into the state government thing.
So anyway, 63 different problems with one company. Yesterday I mentioned this motivational coach who claims that the average person has 2,000 to 3,000 different thoughts per day. I wonder how many thoughts the average Agbar employee has per day. Maybe only 63. Anyway, we have to go. We'll be back tomorrow. We'd like to thank our producer, Mr. Bobby Sherwood.